Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We're always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to join our conversations here on the Exchange, feel free. Phone numbers as follows, anywhere in our listening area, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, email address jx@jeffnet.org. For all the times people in politics refer to the United States as a Christian country, or at least a country based on Christian values, good luck finding references to Jesus Christ in the Constitution. But you will find an official avoidance of religion in there. Just the same, says this hour's guest, the permeation of Christian values into the thinking of our society is extensive. This is a situation Paul Kivel calls Christian hegemony, and it is a situation he examines in his book, Living in the Shadow of the Cross, Understanding and Resisting the Power and Privilege of Christian Hegemony. Paul Kivel is a social activist focused on oppression, justice, and violence prevention, and he's the director of something called the Christian Hegemony Project. Paul Kivel, thanks for joining us today.
It's good to be with you.
Can we assume this book is something like the manifesto of the Christian Hegemony Project in print?
Well, I guess it's a good comprehensive view of the ideas and importance of what the project is about.
So, Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself. What in your life led to your feelings about Christianity, or at least led to this examination of Christianity?
I've been doing social justice education, activism, and writing for, well, over four decades at this point, working a lot on violence prevention, issues of peace and social justice, interpersonal violence, a range of issues. And I began to see, as I looked at systems of oppression like racism and sexism and economic inequality, that central to all of them was a core worldview, a set of concepts that really helped understand the interconnections between them and their historical development. And at the same time, I began to see that accumulating over the centuries in our society was a network of institutions and of wealth and power that have tremendous impact in our public and foreign policy.
And those, by and large, you feel are Christian assemblages?
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes people ask me why I use the word hegemony. Hegemony really means dominance, but we think of dominance as external force, the police, the military, government intervention. Hegemony means a system that's been so long-standing and so deeply rooted that it is no longer visible to most of us. It just has become the way things are, the natural in the way we use that word. And so hegemony captures that much deeper, more pervasive level that this dominant form of Christianity works at.
Well, let's explore the forms it takes, because you did write an earlier book called Uprooting Racism. So do you feel that, for example, racism and Christianity are strongly connected?
Absolutely. We can actually see the origins of kind of what we call biological or scientific racism in Spain during the Inquisition, when Jews and Muslims were told to convert or leave the country in order to create a pure Christian state. And then the Inquisition was set up to make sure that those who converted were honestly converted and not just secretly practicing. And the courts decided that it wasn't just that somebody could be practicing, their grandparents needed to be Christian for them to be legitimate Christians. And then after a while, the courts decided even that wasn't sufficient. If a person had one drop of Jewish or Moorish blood in their ancestry, then they couldn't be a legitimate Christian. And you can see the origins of the one-drop rule, this concept of, you know, biological race that developed out of this Christian society. And the Spanish even had a word called, a phrase called limpieza de sangre, the cleanness of blood, which denoted a bona fide legitimate Christian.
There's no question that this book is going to step on some people's toes, but it seems like you are taking some care not to actually stomp on them really hard, in the sense that you appear to take some care in trying to separate Christianity and Christians. Would you explain the approach you took here?
I think that that's very important. The book's not about individual Christians or individual Christian beliefs. Christians have a wide variety of beliefs and a wide variety of relationships to the dominant form of Christianity we have in our society. nor is the book really about Christianity per se. Christians have created all kinds of Christianities over the centuries, many of them under attack by the dominant form, the Orthodox forms. And today, there are still many alternative. There's liberation churches and black churches and feminist churches and et cetera. What I'm talking about is the form that's become dominant over the centuries through its institutional power, its systematic elimination of dissenting views, and the way that the basic concepts have come together into a worldview that influences all of us.
And it results in what you say is the, for example, the quote is, the healthcare, educational, and criminal legal systems favor Christians and Christian values. Wow.
It's why that's what I mean by hegemony, is that it's pervasive, it's systematic, it's inside all of our systems. Many, for instance, in the criminal legal system, we actually lock up more people for what are really considered to be sinful behavior than we do for violent or dangerous behavior. We have hundreds of thousands of people locked up for sexual activity, for personal drug use, for being poor, for being people of color, things that are not crimes. They've traditionally been considered sins within dominant Christianity.
Much more to talk about with Paul Kivel. His book is Living in the Shadow of the Cross, Understanding and Resisting the Power and Privilege of Christian Hegemony. Paul Kivel is also the director of the Christian Hegemony Project. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we return from this break. Back with Paul Kivel and your phone calls and emails in a minute 15. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Paul Kivel. He is the director of the Christian Hegemony Project, which is no surprise given the title of his book, Living in the Shadow of the Cross, Understanding and Resisting the Power and Privilege of Christian Hegemony. Paul Kivel, our guest. You can join our conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Paul, when you talk about Christian hegemony, though, and that things like the healthcare, educational, and criminal legal systems favoring Christian values, this is something that is still, in essence, as you go through the book, you realize it's something that's generally invisible to people in society, even if they're not Christian, because you don't realize these are based upon Christian values.
Right. I think one of the clearest examples is our foreign policy. There's a dominant Christian concept that of dualism, and that we're engaged in a cosmic battle between good and evil, between God and the devil, heaven and hell. And we hear, you know, our political leaders say, you're either with us or against us. And we have a concept, a longstanding kind of framework coming out of dominant Christianity of manifest destiny, the sense that the United States is divinely blessed and has a special role in the world as a role model, as the bearer of good things to all peoples, and a responsibility to go out and bring Christianity and civilization or democracy and free markets, whatever. You know, the language has become more secularized over the years, but it's the same general attitude of American exceptionalism. In fact, Obama last month in front of the United States said very specifically, America is an exceptional country. And this comes out of that dominant Christian framework, and it justifies wars, crusades, really, in other countries like Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and just the general militarization of our foreign policy.
But it's an interesting situation, particularly as brought up by people on the left of late, which is like, they're pointing out things like, wasn't Jesus a humble guy who believed in being nice to the poor? This certainly comes up through the teachings of Pope Francis I, in office for less than a year now as well. So some split here between the values of Christ himself and the values of Christianity as expressed through society.
Exactly. There are many things in the New Testament and many different kinds of ways to interpret them. And you know, Christians have created various forms of Christianity based upon their interpretations of what was really said or meant. But over the centuries, a certain orthodoxy has come in been part of our dominant system and coalesced into institutions of wealth and power like the major denominations, parachurch organizations, things like that. I think what's important is that, you know, some Christians will say, well, that's not my Christianity or that's not my Jesus, but this is a social system of oppression that we're all inside of, and we can't just say, well, I don't believe that, so it doesn't affect me or it's not in impacting our public policy or our interpersonal relationships.
And you do lay out places in the book where people can stop thinking theoretically and really get into the nitty-gritty of how this is expressed. In fact, there's one thing in here called the Christian Dominant Culture Checklist. Can you run down some of the items there that you provide?
Well, basically, it's looking at all the ways that Christian dominance shows up in our society, and it has to do with everything, simple things from the calendar we use, which is obviously divided into two periods from the before and after the life of Jesus, our Christian holiday cycle, the currency, the songs we sing that have Christian references in them. But it also has to do with the hate crimes in our communities, the missionary activities overseas, the wars that we get into based upon this justification, and the concepts of sin and salvation that pervade, you know, the messages that many of us get as young people that our bodies are not okay, our feelings are not okay, our sexuality, our sexual orientations are not okay, that basically we are sinful. Part of that is blaming women for being the source of sin and temptation, and other groups traditionally labeled other by dominant Christianity.
Paul Kibble's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is Living in the Shadow of the Cross, Understanding and Resisting the Power and Privilege of Christian Hegemony. You describe a binary system in language, in names, in symbols, and more. Binary meaning what in this context?
Everything gets divided into either or, good or bad. If you listen to yourself or others talk over the next few days, you'll be struck by how often we make a very quick judgment about something that it's either good or bad and then dismiss it. It's a good movie, it's bad weather, she's a good kid, he's a bad boy. We're constantly using the good, bad, this overly simplified moral judgment. If you think about it, the weather is not good or bad. The weather just is. If you're going for a picnic, then rainy weather is inconvenient. You might label it bad. If you're a farmer needing the rain on your crops, then it's welcome, and you might label it good. But there's nothing inherently moral about the weather. And I think that in so many cases, this dualism, this binary division, makes it very difficult for us to see the complexity of situations and the need to understand different perspectives, the diversity, to welcome the complications rather than being frustrated that things aren't simply good or bad.
And again, it's difficult to figure out that your culture is permeated with a sense like this when you've always lived in the culture, as most of us have. But for example, in a place, in a part of the world where Christianity is not dominant, like, say, for example, China, did they not think in binary terms, good, bad, black, white, et cetera?
Exactly. That language is not used. That kind of judgmentalness of everything is not used. What has happened within dominant Christianity is that good-bad dichotomy has been elevated to a cosmic battle between good and evil, and so the stakes become very high. So if somebody just doesn't have a disagreement with you, but they're bad or even perhaps evil or dangerous. A country that we have a disagreement with is not just, you know, has different political interests, but becomes the axis of evil, and therefore it's easy to justify aggression and violence against them.
Or the empire that is the focus of evil in the modern world, as Ronald Reagan once called the Soviet Union.
Exactly. We have a long history of our foreign policy being guided by this binary cosmic battle framework.
Well, is this also why we tend to live with a dual in so many other areas as well? Just dual choices, you know, Democrat, Republican, chocolate, vanilla, American national, and so forth?
Exactly. Many countries have a wide variety of political parties and an apportioned system where different different parties get different percentages of the votes, and a much more complex and therefore representative and democratic system than we're limited to two parties. We also see this in terms of gender, where it's just always been assumed that there's just male and female. It's a simple binary, but we now know there's many, many people who don't fall into a simple either-or category of male or female. And, of course, racism has often been white or not white, white or people of color. And race is much more complex than that and is not any kind of binary system.
It's true. You know, we've talked in the past with we had the author of a book called Skin Color on, who pointed at the huge variation in human skin tones, and yet it has tended to be white and not white over the years, is the way we look at things. Paul Kibble, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, his book Living in the Shadow of the Cross, Understanding and Resisting the Power and Privilege of Christian Hegemony, about the ways in which Christian values permeate our culture. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. And we're in Ash Valley. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Paul Kibble.
Yeah, hi.
Hello.
I hear what you're saying. You know, it seems to me that as Christians, we're supposed to be, you know, the basic precept is love. And if we love ourselves and our family and our community and our country, we need to be critical. And what's happened, I think, is we've inherited a culture of denial. You know, it's something that it surpasses my comprehension. Actually, I have to admit. But it seems to me we've been told a lot of falsehoods. It's kind of like our Constitution. You said earlier, you know, Jesus is not mentioned in the Constitution. Well, a lot of people kind of make some kind of connection. You know, we have this Christian land, and it's, you know, we have this, our government is Christian, and everything we do is Christian. But I think if we actually read the Bible, like the King James Version, you know, the third word version ought to give us a clue. How many versions were there, you know? What did it actually say in Greek or Hebrew or Aramaic or whatever, you know? And learn the Orientalisms and all the differences between modern culture and the way people lived back when it was written. And understand that, I mean, when I've read the Bible front to back, different versions of it, I find it kind of interesting because of it's been translated, retranslated, and interpreted so much, you know, it can mean anything to anybody. But
right,
what
exactly.
I find what's interesting, though, is Christ never said he was God. You know, I think if you're going to be a true Christian, you follow the philosophy rather than deifying him. And then I see how people deify the president. You know, they call the president and his family the first family. Well, the Constitution says no titles, no nobility. You know, So we have this really silly kind of understanding of who we are.
Well, the first family or the Antichrist, depending upon which would lead back to the binary thinking that Paul Kibble talks about. But Paul, your thoughts about what he just said?
Well, generally, I think it is important for Christians to be very critical of what's said and done in the name of Christianity. It's very deep and internalized. The caller just said good Christians versus bad Christians. That language of we want to separate ourselves and not actually claim responsibility for the ways that we've internalized this system in our own thinking and behavior. So it is important that we think honestly about, you know, where our values, where our understandings of Christian values come from on the one hand. And like the caller said, there's many different interpretations possible, and that's why there should be a wide range of different Christianities. But what we have today is one dominant system and some very small groups of folks practicing alternative Christianities.
Love, hierarchy, and obedience. You say these are all tied together in Christian hegemony. How?
I do, and I think the caller mentioned that love is central to Christianity. But in dominant Christianity, it's been tied into a sense of various hierarchies. God loves his children, but if they reject him, then they're punished severely and often killed. That hierarchy is permeated in Christian relationships between men and women, between parents and children. between white people and people of color, with there being an assumption that the person in the superior position, men or white people or parents, are supposed to love the people that they're responsible before, but that love should lead them to discipline them very harshly if needed, so that they don't stray, so they don't go to hell, so they lead a moral life. And that's often been used to justify tremendous amounts of violence, violence of men against women, violence of parents against their children, that has been condoned and actively supported within dominant Christianity, because the fate of going to hell is much greater than any temporary physical damage. At least that's the perspective that comes from, I think. So it makes it very confusing for many people in our society that love is tied into these relationships of domination and hierarchy. We used to have a marriage vow that said that the responsibility of the man was to love and protect, and the woman to love and obey. And that immediately sets up a hierarchy where he can, in his protection of her soul, he can hit her or abuse her or control her, so that because he is the responsible party.
For that matter, there's also the belief in dominion over nature. Is there any comparison to this in non-Christian religions?
Well, there's a wide variety of other religions and other cultures. I think that, you know, certainly among indigenous cultures, the understanding is that we're all interdependent with life, with plants and animals and the earth, and that we have to live in balance and harmony, and we have a responsibility to do that. Within dominant Christianity, if you come from a place of dominion, and the sense that the land itself, the earth itself, is not sacred, that has been used to justify almost unlimited exploitation and devastation of the natural environment. So we're not going to be able to solve our environmental problems from a worldview that says we are in charge, and we have control over it, and it really even might not make that much difference what we do, because eventually the millennium will come and we'll be moving on to another realm.
Let us take another call. Here's Michael in Mendocino. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Paul Kibble. His book is Living in the Shadow of the Cross.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Kibble, I'm currently reading Michael Parente's God and His Demons, which seems to dovetail much of what you're saying. Another book, though, that I want to comment on is John Lamb Lash's book, Not in His Image, written some years ago, in which he states that the three Abrahamic religions in general, Islam, Judaism, and Christianity, are a curse and a virus, as he calls it, infecting the whole of humanity. You've drubbed Christianity pretty good. What is your view on Islam and Judaism? And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. My book is focused on Christianity because that's what's dominant in our society. That's what's shaped our worldview. That's what influences our public and foreign policy. But even Christianity, there's a lot of different alternative Christianity. So I'm not saying that Christianity is the problem. I'm saying that when a system like Christianity becomes dominant, when its institutions have tremendous power and wealth and influence the public policy, that is a problem, and that would be a problem in any society. So I think I want to make it clear that I'm not attacking religion. I'm not attacking individual people's beliefs about religion. And I don't see religion itself as a source of all evil, which would be another dominant Christian way to think about that. But I do think that we have to look at the power and wealth that the Catholic Church, the Episcopalians, the Mormons, the Southern Baptists have accumulated, and how they use that in our national government, in our state and local governments, that we have to look at parachurch organizations like Focus on the Family, Prison Fellowship, Campus for Crusade for Christ, World Vision, and on, tens of thousands of these parachurch nonprofit organizations, and see it as a interwoven system of oppression that we live inside of. And this grows out of the conjunction in the 4th century of Christianity and the Roman Empire, when the Roman Empire, the emperor, determined that there would be only one acceptable true religion throughout all of the Roman Empire, and that was a particular form of Christianity, and everything else was beyond the pale.
We have calls lined up to talk to Paul Kivel. You can join us as well. The book is called Living in the Shadow of the Cross, Understanding and Resisting the Power and Privilege of Christian Hegemony. Again, as you heard, Paul Kivel, careful not to single out Christianity for abuse. There are good things religion has produced, he admits, but he talks about the fact that it permeates our culture. We'll come back and talk more with Paul Kivel and take your phone calls and emails as well when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for joining us. Our guest today is Paul Kivel, a social activist focused on oppression, justice, and violence prevention, the director of the Christian Hegemony Project. His book is Living in the Shadow of the Cross, Understanding and Resisting the Power and Privilege of Christian Hegemony, in which he makes the argument that we are so permeated by Christian ideas in our culture that we don't even recognize them as Christian. Binary thinking, for example, good, bad, evil, good, chocolate, vanilla, you name it, all the binary thinking he brings back to Christianity and that way of thinking. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Grumpy John of Grants Pass, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. I would like him to address my problem with Christianity, which is, which version do you accept? How is my question, can you possibly accept this book as a code and just ignore part of it? Hey, homosexuals are definitely bad. I'll say, okay, I'll go with you on that as long as I see you guys start to stone adulterers. You do that, and I'll start putting down the gays. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the call, Grumpy John.
Thanks for the call. I think that, again, you know, individual Christians take a lot of meaning from different passages of the New and Old Testament. They interpret them in the ways they want to. They come together. They create churches out of that, and that's fine. You know, if that's the free exercise of religion in our society. What's the problem is dominance. Is the accumulation of wealth and power and a certain set of values and concepts that override a lot of our individual beliefs and practices that are used to manipulate people into supporting public policies that are punitive, that and invasions of other countries and the lack of access to reproductive rights for women and things like that, very concrete things. So we could obviously talk a long time about how to interpret the Bible and the various interpretations that different Christians have. What's important, though, and what my book is about, is not Christianity, but it's about dominance. And how do we get out from under the system of oppression and join the long line of people who have resisted dominant Christianity over the centuries?
So, Paul, let's talk about judgment, because if we follow you along the line of thought in the book, here again it's binary, judger and judged. So mm-hmm. It sounds like the major struggle is figuring out who gets to judge the judged.
Right. And, of course, once we're caught in that bind, there's no way out. We need to, I think, really welcome complexity and realize that things are not simple, that there's always multiple perspectives. And that doesn't mean that we don't have moral choices to make, but it does mean that the judging of people and their beliefs is not useful and not really relevant. People can believe whatever they want, but when people start to operate out of those beliefs in ways that attack other people, for instance, in hate crimes, or organize powerful institutions to roll back the civil rights of some groups, or privilege others, that those become political processes, and we all have to step up and address those.
When it becomes political, though, particularly in the America, well, let's say since the 80s, with the greater polarization over time, it really becomes, there's no nuances here. There are easy answers, as Ronald Reagan said, or there. And the other idea that you can't have nuanced thinking like Obama and John Kerry, et cetera, have been accused of thinking over the years. You know, it's really got to be you bring the hammer down. You do this or you do that.
Right. And that's a false choice. That's the choice that dominant Christianity has often given to people, convert or leave or convert or die. It's the kind of thinking that leads to escalation into violence, into war. And we have to resist that, and we have to understand how we get pulled into that in our own thinking by condemning those who are condemning us as bad or evil or whatever. Or we can't solve any of our social problems without understanding the complexities, without negotiating and compromising and bringing in all voices, all parts of our community. So. That's the danger of the binary, the judgment, is that it leaves us stranded when it comes to addressing environmental or economic or political problems.
Particularly, as you point out, if you accept it when it is thrust upon you, if it's me against you and you've now identified me as the other, then by gosh, I'm going to give it back to you.
Exactly.
Let's take another call. Here's Chris in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Paul Kibble. His book is Living in the Shadow of the Cross.
Hi. Unfortunately, I missed the first part of this interview, but I'm curious to hear your opinion of Martin Luther King. It's because he did stand up to the domination system in our government and spoke out against the Vietnam War and, you know, was for the poor and all that, and then got assassinated a year later, probably because of his outspokenness. And granted, there was much resistance to King in our government and among the population, but then there's also been a lot of support for him. In fact, we now have a national holiday, and of course there was a lot of ugliness about, you know, those who resisted it becoming a national holiday, but again, there were enough people to support his dream, which he articulated so well, and in that dream, he got beyond the binary system. He used the image of the table that he foresaw a day when all children would be able to sit at the table. So I'm curious to hear your opinion of Martin Luther King.
All right, thanks for that, Chris. Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for the question. Yes, this is exactly what I'm talking about, that there's a long history of Christians who have stood up against dominant Christianity, and some have created alternative Christianity. Some have organized for social justice, have been abolitionists, supported women's suffrage, the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King is a good example of somebody who stood up against the dominant forms of Christianity in our country and challenged them, challenged the militarism and the economic injustice. At the time, for instance, when the March on Washington was called and he was supporting that, many black Christian churches as well as white Christian churches warned him not to do that, that it was too dangerous, that it was too risky, that it was too bold, etc. So he's exactly the kind of example of getting together with other Christians and allies to challenge the dominant worldview and the dominant political power. He's also an example, unfortunately, of how that gets responded to by dominant Christian institutions, the way it has traditionally been, with violence and marginalization and disrespect. And so that's very much the situation we still are in today, is how do we organize together to resist, to build alternative communities, sustainable and just communities. And that's the challenge I think we all face. And my book hopefully will help us see more clearly what we're up against and how deep it is and how we have to make the connections between these issues.
Let's take another call. Here's Dennis in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Paul Kibble. His book is Living in the Shadow of the Cross. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. Hey, here's my question. When you hear people like, Sarah Palin, Hannity, I don't know, all those kind of folks, who are always making references to Christianity and God, and they are tying that into our country, you know, nationalism and that idea of, you know, Americans being special and great and all that. Is that really Christianity, or is that something else? I've always been a little confused about that.
All right. Thanks for that, Dennis.
I think that people like that are claiming Christianity for themselves. They're saying this is Christianity, what we say it is. And they have the support of powerful institutions, economic institutions and political institutions, that find it convenient to, you know, give them a lot of publicity, a lot of attention, to put them on the radio and in front of the cameras. It's no more Christian than any other form of Christian. There's lots and lots of different Christianities. But it is generally consistent with dominant Christianity, the system that has a grip on our society and on our minds. So there's a reason they get such attention, and that's what we have to look at. What are they using this for? What is their agenda? What gives them the right to claim that this is Christianity?
Well, now that you bring it up, I want to come back to a point you made earlier, which was you talked about the parachurch groups and the churches themselves, but you mentioned oppression from them. How is that oppression expressed?
Well, it's expressed through public policies that demonize various groups of people, like gays, like women who have sexual lives and want access to reproductive rights. It is oppressive in the sense that its values are dominant in our school systems around high-stakes testing and privatization of schools so that religious schools can get public funding. The criminal legal system that incarcerates so many is a system of oppression, of racial inequality and class inequality that's based upon a Christian moral evaluation of who people are. There's lots of very specific forms of oppressive institutional behavior that come out of this dominant system.
Let's take another call. We have just a few minutes left. Satgiano in Phoenix. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Paul Kivel. His book is Living in the Shadow of the Cross.
I just wanted to call and thank Paul for writing a book that's going deeper into our structure that we're using to create wars and separations from other people. I think we need more of this type of thing because, you know, I meditate lightly, but when you start watching your mind, you realize you've got this language structure going on that separates you from people, and most of it comes from Christianity, in my case. So I just am calling to appreciate your book, Raising Our Level of Consciousness in this country. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Satgiano.
Thanks for your comment.
Let us take another call from Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Paul Kivel, Living in the Shadow of the Cross.
Yes, very quickly. I like the comment that the words of Jesus are like a mirror. The mirror doesn't change, his words doesn't change, but we all individually see in that mirror what we want to see. One of the other things, Thomas Jefferson and others knew that if they started having a religion of the nation, it would bring up the bit that man was created with free will. And they knew that the Supreme Court could never, never accomplish anything if they went along with the idea that man was created with free will. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Thoughts, Paul?
Thanks for your comment. Jefferson and others strongly believed in the separation of church and state. But think about it, church and state, not religion and state. They were coming from a generally dominant Christian framework in which they did not think that Native Americans or Jews or Muslims should have rights or voting power or, you know, citizenship particularly. And so they were concerned about any one Christian denomination becoming dominant over all of the others. So I think it's important that they set a very strong framework for a certain separation of religion and state. But we have a lot of work to do to actually make that real today when Christianity still has such a dominant influence in our government and in our economic system, etc.
There's a part of the book, Living in the Shadow of the Cross, where you get into a beliefs and values checklist, and you show that binary thinking permeates all. So it appears that, you know, things like the good guys won, or there are two sides to every story, would probably not be in our lexicon without Christianity, which brings us to the major question is, if you're going to try to get people to lighten up a little bit, loosen up, think about things in terms of other than binary situations, how do you do that when your likely reaction is going to be, you're now a bad guy, you're against us?
That's one of the challenges, I think. And I think it helps to really appreciate complexity, to embrace diversity and multiculturalism. It helps to notice that voice of judgment that we have in our minds, not just about other people, but our own behavior, that constant war that we have going on inside about whether our behavior or our actions or our sexuality is good or bad. I think that there's some, you know, kind of personal discipline around noticing how we think and what we talk about. But I also think that even more important is looking around at how dominant Christianity works in our institutions. We're all members of organizations, or workplaces, schools, community groups, and we need to look at how Christianity is showing up, this dominant form is showing up in our systems around us, and join the long line of people who have been resisting and organizing to build sustainable and just communities.
Well, the book certainly makes you think. It is called Living in the Shadow of the Cross, Understanding and Resisting the Power and Privilege of Christian Hegemony. Paul Kibble wrote it. He's been our guest. Paul, thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet. That'll do it for today's exchange. Tomorrow on The Exchange at 8, we'll talk about what's up with Cover Oregon, what's happening there. We'll talk about Alzheimer's Awareness Month at 8:30, and then we'll talk to the author of the book called Blood, The Stuff of Life. It gets into the physical and sociological aspects of blood. That's all tomorrow on The Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant is Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Talk to you tomorrow. Have a great day.